This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. And I am so excited to have Howard Chai on the program today. He is a staff writer and the Western lead at stories.com. Stories, of course, real estate stories, but spelled S-T-O-R-E-Y-S, like stories in a building. I think they did that on purpose.
I think it's a play on words. Yeah. No, it's most people listening will know about stories and probably see the byline with Howard Chai's name. A couple of reasons I'm excited for this conversation. One is I feel like Howard was at least an outsider, a renter in Burnaby who got into the real estate end of journalism without knowing much about it and has spent the last 3-4 years in the business and has come to kind of interesting conclusions about what's going on. So it's a kind of unique take. And then two, he's also doing a lot of the reporting around insolvencies in the business and breaking news. And he has some hot takes on what's going on there too. So stay tuned for that. It's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, for sure. I really enjoyed talking to Howard. He's got a good insight into the market. So can't wait for that, Matt. But before we get to that, of course, this real estate podcast is sponsored by our team, Scalina Real Estate here in Vancouver. And today we have the segment that remains nameless still. One of these.
That's right. This is a quiz segment that remains nameless, Adam. I think this is an easy one, but we'll see. This was hot news this week. So, Adam, the federal government just announced major GST relief for first-time home buyers on new construction. I think both parties during the election were jockeying with this type of policy, and it's been announced. So here's the question for you, and it's going to be a multiple choice, Adam. What's the price threshold where a first-time home owner or home buyer gets the maximum amount of savings when buying new construction? Is it A, $500,000, B, $750,000, C, $1 million, or D, $1.5 million?
Well, Matt, I might have to phone a friend. I'm just getting acquainted with this new...
Before you phone a friend though, Adam, maybe we should talk about one of our listings over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Yes, Matt. We have a fantastic new listing that's just coming to market. Super excited. This one is at 189 Kiefer Street, which is Kiefer Block, unit 512. So just shy of 900 square feet, 2-bedroom, 2-bath, plus a den, which is awesome. The den is actually probably the size of most condo bedrooms. So it's like almost 10 by 10.
You'd almost say it's a 3-bed, although it doesn't have the closet and the window.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I mean, you could easily do a PAX unit in there. It could very easily be a child's bedroom or a home office or a nursery. It's well situated for that. One parking, one storage. High-end finishes. This is a Solterra building, still relatively new, and a spectacular rooftop deck with views of the city, North Shore Mountains. Really, really great summer spot. Just in time.
Yeah, fantastic rooftop amenity there. They have the projector. You know,
yes.
Weren't there Canucks games at one point? Were you ever at one of those Canucks games?
I've seen them. I've never been at the Canucks games. But you know what's funny is that's my favorite post Canuck game spot to have a drink is almost right next door, which is the Kiefer Bar.
Right.
Which is always a great, great spot.
Right. No, it's a fantastic spot. I feel like concrete boutique building. There's a lot to like at 189 Kiefer. So check it out at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. It's one of our featured listings. And while you're there, Adam, click sell with us and you can download our most downloaded document of all time, the sold plan, that start on launch date. Basically a document to get you ready to list your property. There's no better document out there. Tons of positive feedback. That's sell with us at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. But Adam, before we cut to our talk with Howard Chai, we do have to answer the quiz question.
I forgot GST. To give the price, Matt. I forgot to give the price. Yeah. So almost shy of 900 square feet, and it's listed at $779,900. If you can believe that.
I feel like we're talking a lot about price per square foot on new listings on this show. That seems like exceptional value. Because remind me, 189 Kiefer, what year is that? 2016, 2017?
Yeah, Matt, actually 2014. Downtown, concrete, two bed, around 860, 870 a foot.
Unbelievable value. Unbelievable value. That is for sure. And that's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. So Adam, just to remind you again, GST relief for first-time home buyers buying new construction across Canada. The question for you is, what's the price threshold where first-time home buyers get the maximum amount of savings? $500,000, $750,000, $1 million, or $1.5 million?
Matt, I'm going to go see.
$1 million, you are correct, sir. And that is a savings of $50,000 from May 26th because the contract has to be written on May 27th or after. But that's a significant amount of savings. Of course, if it's less, it's 5% up to $1 million. Anywhere from 1.1 million to 1.5 million, it's a sliding scale down. So you do get some relief. But yeah, a decent policy. I do see a lot of people in the development community saying that it should be for any buyer across the board, which makes a lot of sense because first-time home buyers, I don't think, are necessarily the dominant group buying pre-construction or new construction. But any relief is good relief right now in my books. Yeah, so good news and nice work on the quiz.
Well, here's the two questions I have, because I mean, I wonder if this moves the needle on pre-sale. This is a question that I've been kind of thinking of and talking to with colleagues. And one thing that came up was, what percentage of buyers who stumble across a pre-sale project know that GST is payable on top of that price that they're looking at? I wonder.
So this might be, it's like not burying the lead, but a policy that you didn't even know you were paying the GST. So it might actually be a benefit.
But where I could see it benefiting is someone in a sales center that, you know, if you find out about GST, that could be a big potential objection, right? I don't want to move forward because I didn't realize I had this extra 5% on top of the purchase price.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So maybe it actually starts to move the needle but I always think about, you know, over the years, people that call in about new construction, a lot of them learn that they're going to be paying GST on new product, right?
Yeah. So, it's usually you or the agent who's informing them about the GST.
Yeah. Regardless, good news.
The good news, the other thing, and here's what I was thinking, and this goes back to John Benest, his conversation on the show, and a couple others about the standing in, and Michael Ferreira talked about this as well, the standing inventory in Metro Vancouver. So new construction already built, which presumably would be interesting for first-time homebuyers who are presumably looking to move into something sooner than 2028, 2029. My understanding is that qualifies. So there's up to 4,000 units of standing inventory either going to be on the market soon or pretty close to that number now. And now buyers can go out shopping for new construction that's already built and get that 5% discount. And it might even allow the developers to, you know, to negotiate a little bit off as well, because no one's paying that GST, right?
Yeah, it's a huge benefit, and I didn't mean to throw a wet blanket on it.
I don't think you did.
I think it was just more of a thought. But anyways, Matt, without further ado, let's cut to this conversation with Howard Chai, who definitely is not a wet blanket.
No, he's the opposite. Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it is also making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
Adam, we want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Soane House, one of Marcon's latest communities that features a West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced, Nordic-inspired design for architecture that endures.
Soane House offers 165 junior one to three-bedroom homes in West Coquitlam, integrating nature into the built environment.
Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's marcon.ca/soenehaus. Or visit the display center at Outpost in Port Moody.
We also want to highlight 102 and Park. With billions already invested in Surrey City's central development over the last 15 years, the time is now to invest in its future, Surrey 3.0.
Introducing 102 and Park, a simple, straightforward skyscraper featuring 376 homes. Quite simply, this is a once-in-a-decade opportunity coming soon to Surrey's central downtown plaza. This is a time and the place to invest. Register at marcon.ca/102andpark. That's marcon.ca/102andpark.
Marcon, building for life. Okay, so we're here with Howard Chai. He is the Western lead and staff writer at Stories. Thanks for taking the time today, Howard.
Thanks for the invitation, guys. I've a long time listener to the podcast and appreciate the invitation.
No, it's great to have you. Great to have you on the show, Howard.
Yeah, and can you start maybe by telling our listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, no problem. I was born in Taiwan and immigrated to British Columbia when I was four. That was 1998, and I've been lived in Coquitlam for a couple of years before we moved to Burnaby, and been in Burnaby ever since. Went to university, studied originally as a computing science major, actually just interested in coding. Had some struggles the first couple of years, so I ended up taking some communications courses just as kind of a GPA booster, really, and just those courses were pretty writing intensive, and I actually discovered that I quite enjoyed writing and just I really liked how those kind of courses really made you think about things. And at the same time, this was around 2015, 2016, Donald Trump announced his presidency, and there's just so much news, just an explosion of news everywhere. It's so much things to keep up with. And I started reading a lot of news and just started really grasping the importance of journalism and seeing what good journalism can really do. And obviously at the same time, I was discovering kind of my passion for writing, and just those things kind of just intersected, and I just decided to make the switch over from computer science to journalism, and haven't looked back since. And joined Stories in August 2022. Was the first BC full-time staffer, and continue to live in Burnaby today. And I'm a renter, which is particularly interesting in Burnaby because I'm sure you guys know it's one of the more expensive markets in Canada, which actually really surprised me when I discovered that. But unfortunately, I've lived in one of those older rental buildings, and just relatively affordable for me.
You just have good, yeah. You just got cheap rent, Howard.
Yeah,
Howard. Can you maybe? Well, first of all, why real estate? Why focus your writing skills on the market?
I did not actually choose real estate, to be honest. I was really just looking for a good journalism job, and this seemed like a great opportunity. I mean, did not have much of an interest in real estate, to be honest. Obviously, I live here, and I was aware of the kind of housing affordability challenges that we continue to face. And but I cared, always interested from that perspective, but was not like as into the nitty gritty as I am now. So it was really more of a journalism person. And then as soon as I started the job, the interest just continued to grow substantially, obviously. I've always really wanted to cover something that was important to people and affected people's lives. And this is obviously one of those issues. And particularly in British Columbia, it's such a big issue that, politicians talk about it all the time. So I get to cover politics a bit. It real estate also touches on business, touches on economics, touches on a whole wide variety of things that kind of keeps the job really, really interesting for me.
Yeah, never a dull moment, that's for sure. How's the market right now from, I guess, from your journalist perspective?
I think there's some slight variation between whether you're on the residential side as a buyer or seller and whether you're on the development side or commercial side, which is a little bit more of my focus, actually. But generally, I would say it's just uncertainty. There's just so many things up in the air at the moment, including, obviously, the economic situation with the trade war. Even though interest rates are down, people are still kind of on the sidelines, both on the residential side and commercial side. And obviously, we just had the federal election, which also creates a certain level of uncertainty with the potential policy changes and our government might react to the trade war. So that's just a lot of things up in the air. And I think people are just waiting for things to kind of settle down and stabilize a bit before making any big decisions. I think that kind of generally holds true for both residential side and any commercial side.
What about, Howard, in thinking about, you've been doing this for now roughly 3 years or so, how has your perspective of real estate changed over the course of your time writing about it?
I think the biggest change has definitely been about developers and kind of the complexity of being a developer. I think people sometimes, and myself included, like years ago, I think there's this misconception that housing prices are really high just because developers are just greedy. I mean, I imagine there probably is like a little bit of that, but I think there's also a lot more complexity to it. And I think people may not necessarily know, and I myself did not really know this early on, that developers, like when they're building a project, they borrow most of the costs from a lender for their projects. And those lenders have pre-sale requirements and even profit margin requirements. And developers have to hit those pre-sale requirements to get construction financing to construct the projects. And that's where condo projects, obviously. So there's a bit more risk involved. And I think people realize, and obviously there's been insolvencies across the country. And I think that's also some evidence that it's really not developers. Being in development business is not just that straightforward. It's not really a money printing business. Perhaps for some moments in time it was, but I think it kind of ebbs and flows, and we're kind of at a lower point in the market right now.
It strikes me, Howard, that you've basically have been covering the real estate market since the slowdown, right? When the last kind of COVID market that was really, really booming was kind of on the decline by 2022, or at least by mid 2022, if my recollection is right. So you've kind of covered some pretty challenging years in the industry.
Yeah. So I started in August 2022 and kind of missed the COVID boom. And at that time, I think, I don't quite remember where interest rates were exactly at the time, but I mean, it was going up and surely up, right? Started in, obviously, it just started coming down last year. So obviously, there's a whole bunch of other stuff in the market right now, I wasn't really around for the boom times.
You know, it's funny because like I follow stories and I see all your articles and follow along, and you're covering insolvencies and kind of all these juicy stories. I wonder what the stories would have been like. I guess COVID would have had a lot of good, there would have been a lot of interesting stories, but man, it would have been a totally different moment to come up with stories. But I was kind of thinking about stories as a publication because it's a fairly recent, what would you call it? I guess, news source in our marketplace. I guess you said 2022, you're the first full-time staffer. Who is the audience? Is the audience, like from your perspective, basically industry people? I guess I'll just put it to you. Who is the audience and how does that impact the types of stories you write, if at all?
We're definitely more of an industry publication. So we're kind of geared more towards people in the industry that includes realtors like yourselves and brokers and developers and even like government planning people, that kind of crowd. That's a bit of a smaller audience than the general public, although we do write for the general public as well. But a lot of our stories are geared towards industry people. So that also kind of, it's a smaller audience, but we get to go a little bit deeper. We kind of can get technical. We can get a bit geeky with some of the details. We can really dive in for that people and that crowd that may appreciate that. And we do also write another big chunk of our audience is really the general public. I mean, we cover all the development projects, like new projects that are being proposed, which obviously people in the industry may be interested in, but also people in the general public may be, they may want to know what's happening in the neighborhoods and what projects are being proposed. So that's, we also kind of write for the general public as well. And I think, at least personally for me, even when I'm writing stories that are perhaps geared towards people in the industry, I also try to make it accessible to people in the general public, you know, just not using too much jargon or at least explaining the jargon, what jargon means. And I think just kind of overall, just kind of increasing the, helping people be more informed, I think is just whether you're people in the industry, somebody who works in the industry or somebody in the general public who just wants to be up to date. I think that's kind of how I'd sum up our audience.
Is there any consistent feedback that you get from the audience that you're like, oh, this is, I hear this all the time?
Like that we get to go a bit longer. I think a lot of the other publications that are kind of in Vancouver, they kind of, a lot of them, because they're more traditional, they had print editions, they were kind of, had some limitations, I think, just in terms of like, even just pure video length. So we're purely digital, so we kind of, I can kind of go however long as I want. Like, I think some topics, for certain issues, they kind of, you can't really do it justice just going into it like with 500 words. For those kind of topics, I can really kind of go as long as I wanted to. And I think that really helps for certain topics. That's something that people have said they kind of appreciate it, just because there's not too many people writing really long form articles about certain topics, especially like kind of niche industry topics. So that's something people have really appreciated. And also just talking to different people, I think people in the industry have appreciated that. I think that we kind of talk to them and kind of get them out here, what they're kind of concerned about. And also just, yeah, talking to various people at different stakeholders in the industry.
What's a day in the life of a reporter on the real estate beat? Like, I'm thinking Woodward and Bernstein here. Is it as romantic as it sounds, or is it primarily, you know, behind the computer screen? Or tell us about a day in the life of journalists at Stories.
Well, for me personally, I guess to answer you, I do think it actually is a day. I think journalism is one of the jobs, like you're talking about with Steen and the Washington Post reporters. I think if you look at all the journalism, one of the things that I'm a huge journalism enthusiast, and I'll tell you, one of the things I've noticed from looking at all the journalism movies, the one thing that's in all those movies is that none of those reporters really stop working at 5 p.m. They're answering calls, text messages, and talking to people throughout the day, at night, picking up phone calls. And I think that's something I really embrace. I think that's kind of what it takes to be a good reporter. I think for me, it really is kind of a day. I mean, I don't necessarily be like writing articles all day, but like, I think it does. I'm mostly like writing articles and reporting during the day, and then at night, so sometimes like reading more news, keeping up to date, sometimes sending out some emails and looking into various things. Yeah, like I mentioned, because there's just so much, because housing touches on so many different like areas, like business and economics and politics. It keeps it interesting. So like a lot of the days could be kind of different for me. Some days I may be focusing in on a particular policy and breaking down the new policy. Other days I may just be kind of investigating and looking into like an insolvency or some kind of real estate transaction. So all the days can kind of vary, but I guess the overarching theme is that it is kind of a full day, which I really enjoy, and like I do kind of romanticize it a bit. And
no bars though. You're not hanging out in bars at the end of the day.
You didn't start smoking.
No, I think that's more of a, I guess, the classical journalism. I think a lot of it now is probably since COVID, a lot of it is just phone calls and Zooms and
yeah. That.
To get out and go to some events and talk to people. It's always nice to kind of put some faces to names that I've been talking to. So that's always nice when those opportunities come up.
How do you deal with sources? How do you find sources? Like, how do you put together these articles?
A lot of it is just talking to people and just looking at publicly available information, really. Like, you know, council meeting agendas, court documents, financial reports, press releases. That covers a lot of it. And it's also kind of a bit of a smaller segment, which is just talking to people and seeing what people are interested in, what other people in the industry want to know or are thinking about or concerned about. Yeah, and just like from there, I just kind of, I've had a luxury really of being, having the freedom to kind of explore what really kind of whatever subjects I really want to in this job. And I kind of go wherever my curiosities go. And one of the things I love about journalism is just that what I, how I was described to people, when you go to school, you're paying for an education, you're paying to learn. But when you're a journalist, you're being paid to learn, essentially. And then that's kind of what I really enjoy learning. And then that's sometimes there might just be some topics where I want to learn more about it. And I think people in the industry or our readers might be interested in learning more about it. And I just decided to kind of come up with a story that can kind of help me learn and help other people learn too. So I've had the luxury of that kind of freedom.
Are there any big stories you're working on right now, Howard? Or is there any gossip out there or something you're like, oh man, this is exciting, but it hasn't hit the airwaves yet. Not a lot of people know about it.
Like, I always hear a little bit of gossip. Don't necessarily, you know, want to divulge some gossip and start a rumor cycle, but there are always a few things out there that are, you know, sometimes a little bit speculative of, but you know, always have to kind of necessarily, like, you know, trust but verify. I think that's kind of the principle of journalism: trust people, but also verify whether it's true or not. And that's kind of how I do it. But there is no really one overarching big story, though. I think a big thing is just, I'm sure you guys are aware of, just in recent months, there's been a huge conversation starting around development cost charges and development fees that governments charge to developers on new construction. I think that's kind of an overarching theme. I think that started in the last month, and I think we'll continue the rest of this year. This was something that was kind of mentioned in both the conservative and liberal party platform. So it's kind of becoming a national topic of discussion now. So I think that will be a continued point of discussion, a big theme of, I'm also keeping my eye on to see what governments do and whether or not we see any change on that front.
Has covering the real estate market in BC made you more optimistic about the future of the housing market in Canada or less optimistic?
I haven't necessarily, I guess, optimistic in the sense that I feel like it's definitely I think nobody denies that it's a big issue now. I think perhaps years ago, perhaps there were some doubters. I think nowadays, nobody can really deny that we're in housing crisis. I think from that perspective, I'm a bit optimistic. You know, first step to solving a problem is to recognize that there's a problem, right? So I think audience from that, and now it's really just about how you fix it. And there's a lot of disagreements about how to fix it, but I think with more discussion, there's starting to be a little bit of consensus on how to address it, you know, such as the Chelman cost charges, perhaps, that I just talked about, among other things. I guess that whether or not things actually happen and housing prices come down and become more affordable, I think, is a different question. Not sure how optimistic I am about that, but I think I'm optimistic that people are kind of, I think all parties, all levels of governments are now kind of focused on the issue and working towards finding the solutions. I think we're definitely focused in the right direction. Whether or not we kind of get to a good result, I think is kind of remains to be seen.
Have you noticed the kind of narrative around housing changing a little bit in the last year or so, or even 6 months? We were just talking to somebody else a day or two ago, and it kind of struck me that it does feel like we're moving to a very different moment. You know, even David Eby's talking positively about investors a little bit. It feels like the conservatives and the liberals were both, you know, approaching housing in a way that it didn't feel like the way they would have been approaching it, you know, a couple of years back. Have you noticed, maybe I'll put it to you this way, wide open, what are the most interesting trends you're seeing in the market over the last, say, 6 to 12 months?
Well, I'm intrigued of your initial question, which is how it's changed. I think over the years, it's just housing prices have gone a kind of a niche kind of subject to just a kind of a national, like it's kind of the main topic every election.
Yeah, good point, actually. I guess that's front center, right, in the election. So yeah, good point.
Yeah.
We've been doing this for so long, it feels like it's the only thing anyone talks about it, but I think it's just because that's the only thing Adam and I talk about. But anyway, sorry, go on.
No, but yeah, likewise. It's definitely just been like when you're kind of in it every day, it kind of seems like it's the focus, but it's just kind of zooming out a bit. I definitely have seen, even just in my few or so years here, it's just become an increasingly bigger issue. It's like, even just like I recently did a piece a couple months ago about looking back at the Liberal Party's housing initiatives and just looking at all their platforms, and it really stuck out to me how their, this to the 2015 platform was like, it was not really that much of a focus on housing. And then just like every platform since then, there is more and more housing stuff. So that really, I kind of emphasize the point for me. Just obviously it's every election now. And I think even going forward, it's going to be top issue, or at least like a top two or three issue for sure. In terms of the more recently in development trends, I think, yeah, obviously the development charter, I think it just become a huge topic in Ontario and BC, and obviously nationally now. I'm pretty interested to see. I think here in BC, we're seeing some signs that government might take some, might kind of make some changes to kind of alleviate some of those concerns. Other trends include, I think the conversation around investors. I think that investors, especially when it comes to real estate, have kind of been this kind of villainous entity, at least in terms of listening to the governments. And I think, I mean, perhaps there's like a little bit of truth in that, but it's also, I think people also don't necessarily realize how important it is to the real estate market. Like most of the investors who buy housing, they end up, that kind of housing they buy, those condos kind of end up back in the secondary rental market, which obviously an important, it makes up a huge chunk of the rental market really. So I think that conversation is just starting to shift a little bit. Obviously the federal government had the foreign buyer ban, which I think played a big role in kind of denting that investment. And I think there are some conversations starting about welcoming more investors a little bit. I'm a little bit skeptical about seeing whether governments will actually welcome it more. I think perhaps that may not be something that's politically is palatable for certain politicians, but I think the conversation is kind of that's probably the next thing that people are going to be kind of discussing in terms of how to kind of alleviate the housing crisis, in my opinion.
Has your unique lens of looking at everything from the perspective of the housing market influenced your politics?
Not necessarily in that my politics has really changed. I don't think my politics have changed too much. I think the kind of things that I look at are perhaps a little bit different. I think definitely I look a little bit more at housing policy, perhaps, than other things. Obviously, it's a huge issue, but it's obviously a big part of people's platforms. So I do, from that perspective, it does kind of impacts my politics, just in terms of just being a bigger and bigger consideration. I think from that perspective, it has kind of changed my politics a little bit. But at large, just in terms of, at large, I wouldn't say it hasn't changed the politics too much of it, and more so just my perspective of politics and really how politicians kind of operate and how politicians and governments really work behind the scenes, really just learning about it and covering it. That's kind of affected my perspective a little bit. So obviously, because before I was kind of observing from just as a member of the general public, and now I have a little bit of a understanding of different processes and things like that.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible. This podcast is sponsored by Fenway by Caliber, bringing 209 new homes and 24,000 square feet of retail space to Willoughby Town Center.
And this retail component isn't just adding to the area, Adam. It's enhancing an already thriving community hub where neighbors connect over boutique shopping, great food, and everyday essentials. This is one of the final new construction opportunities to own in the heart of Langley's Willoughby Town Center.
And speaking of Langley, is it me or is Langley all you hear about these days? It's become such a powerhouse with over 7,000 businesses, the population set to double by 2040, and that SkyTrain extension arriving in 2029.
What's incredible about this location is that you're getting the best of everything. Your steps from the Langley Events Center, currently undergoing a massive $149 million expansion. The new Tennis Center and future Willoughby Community Center are right across the street. Plus, you've got the new Smith Athletic Park just down the road.
The location really is unbeatable, with 8 schools within walking distance and just minutes from Highway 1. And what I love is that this is a caliber project. They're Langley locals with decades of experience who really understand this community. They've partnered with Polyco Group to bring decades of development expertise to Fenway.
With Langley's population set to double and transit connectivity expanding, this is your chance to be part of BC's fastest growing community. Register at fenwayliving.com. That's FENWAY living.com.
Fenway, where small town heart meets urban sophistication.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia.
Serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakland, please reach out to us at oakland.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Can you say a little bit more about that? Like in terms of the, if I understand correctly, a bit of a glance into how the sausage is made, essentially, is what you're saying, right? Like in terms of policy and the basically how it comes to be. How has your perspective changed there?
And it hasn't necessarily changed. I think it just become a bit more informed and just understanding how like certain policy may be something that's recommended by developers, and then it catches on, and then people in government hear about it, and then they kind of start making potential changes, and then becomes approved or things like that. Just kind of how policy works from starts from an idea, and just to how it becomes ends up in policy. I think it's kind of that process. I think it's something that's been a bit illuminating for me to see how something. It's not always like that, but I think it's just kind of seeing how policy goes from an idea to an approved piece of legislation or a bylaw. Really, is just illuminating, and just to see how long that takes, the kind of work that goes into that, like who is involved, and that has been very interesting for me as well. And just reading about it, and also just talking to developers and talking to policy planners and government officials, and just kind of seeing a dialogue really between all the parties, which people may not necessarily welcome or perhaps are skeptical of, but I think there's some benefit to that as well.
What about your perspective as a renter? How has that kind of informed your interpretation of what's happening in the housing market?
I guess I mentioned, I live in Burnaby, specifically the Metro John, although I kind of bounced around different neighborhoods. But in Burnaby, which is where we've always, at least since the time I've been here, we've been about the most expensive renter market in Canada, really. It's quite surprising. Yeah, after Vancouver and Toronto, I think that the ranking has changed, but we've always been in the top 3. And that was like very surprising to me, I guess, particularly because I happen to get an affordable rent. In terms of my perspective, though, I think it's definitely has helped, have a bit more empathy for people who are renters, which population of renters is growing across the country. So obviously, it's just more and more renters facing expensive rental markets. I mean, rents come down a bit recently in recent months, which is, I think, a little surprising, but I think it's positive depending on your perspective. But prior to that, it just on a steady increase, really, in people getting priced out of the market. And I think a lot of people, a lot of people do have this, this dream of wanting to own a home one day, and not necessarily everybody wants to be a renter. I think now more and more people are sort of increasingly coming to reality of they may have to be a renter for a long time. And I think that is really, that I just, including myself really as somebody in that kind of millennial, like to do is contemplating whether or not they'll be able to own a home one day. I think that kind of, I guess it's something that is, that's something a lot of people have been concerned about. And it's something I can kind of empathize with myself being in that kind of same. And that as a young millennial renter, I think that kind of adds to my perspective when it comes to kind of covering these topics.
In that same vein, do you see any silver linings in the current state of the market, or do you see something that you kind of wish where there would be some change in the market just from someone who's watching policy or watching where there might be opportunities?
Silver linings, I think, like I mentioned, rents are coming down a bit, which I think is all the different people who enter. But I think if you talk to developers, they may not necessarily be thrilled about that, understandably. But in terms of policy, I do think the investment conversation that I talked about briefly ago was, I think that is a positive. I think that's something personally that I think would be beneficial to market. And I think you mentioned a lot of investors that kind of buy the pre-sales that kind of fund those new projects for developers, that those markets, those units most of the time end up in like a secondary rental. Like, I mean, whether or not those units are affordable or not, there is kind of a different question, but they do end up in the renting market, and then, you know, more rental units theoretically would have a positive impact on the market. It would also just help developers get shovels into the ground, which I think from what I hear is really their biggest concern. They just really want to get to the point of construction, and to get to that point, they really need pre-sales to come in. So I think that would really have a big positive impact on the market, if it's just buying products to get on the ground, new units to get come into the market, and then hopefully with more units to prices start coming down a bit.
Speaking of which, trying to get shovels in the ground, Howard, you know, you've reported on a number of high profile developers that have encountered financial difficulties lately. What common threads are you noticing in these situations? And do you think these are one-offs from your perspective, or is it something larger? Does it say something larger about the health of the industry and the development sector?
One of the common things that I've noticed, and I've also been pointed out to me that people have talked to, is just that a lot of these developers that are facing insolvencies, for the most part, they're just really, they weren't super experienced. Like, it's not really a huge developer that is facing trouble. It's usually these kind of developers that people in the industry may not necessarily know, or at least recognize that they're not like completely a big developer. And because they're not a huge developer or a name brand developer, they may not necessarily been able to get lending from one of the big banks. So they've had to go to secondary non-bank lenders, but those lenders usually have much higher interest rates. It's from the ones that I've covered, a lot of the interest rates are like at least over 10% really, which is sad. We didn't cover one where interest rate went up to 25%, which is kind of hard to fathom. Like the daily interest rate of that is just hard to comprehend. And I think when you have interest rates that high, and a lot of these experienced developers weren't super experienced, and perhaps they had multiple projects ongoing at the same time, that kind of all those kind of factors kind of result in having a really small margin of error. And then if one thing starts to go wrong, it kind of just kind of balloons and snowballs really. I think that what I just kind of described, that holds true for a lot of the insolvency that we've seen with some exceptions, but a lot of that, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's indicative of, some of it is, I think, indicative of the market, just because of, I think it was a lot of that kind of happened partially due to interest rates, and a lot of developers that have faced troubles have cited, slow development process and not being able to get shovels into the ground and having to, and the holding costs that come with holding a property and waiting, going through the approval processes. This has been a common theme, but it also, I think that is a bit of a smaller factor compared to the other factors I mentioned, like the experience and the high borrowing costs. And I wouldn't say it's a huge statement on the health of the market, as you said.
What's the most exciting story you've covered since you started on the real estate beat, or like the juiciest story? Like, is there a memorable one where you're like, oh man, that was fun?
Thinking about a little bit whether or not I want to name a name or not, but I guess the juiciest, if you really want to get into the juiciest, was really the, perhaps you guys are aware of it, like back in fall 2019, there was this, a lot of rumors swirling about a particular developer that may have been going under.
I was going to ask you about this because I feel like that kind of just went away. It was pronounced on Twitter, and then like everybody started talking about it. Yeah, give us your take on how that played out.
Yeah, obviously, I think there were kind of two big names that kind of came out of that particular rumor cycle, and a lot of publications, at least the ones that cover real estate, were really focused on that. And then we wrote a story about that. I think people know that I'm talking about Westbank, but I think that was the biggest name, and then everybody, even my other colleagues, even in other public things, everybody was looking at it. Everybody, that was just obviously a huge topic of discussion. I think it was, in my heart to hearts, I think it was a little bit overblown, but obviously it was just a huge rumor, and just it just wasn't really something that even if we wanted to, we couldn't really like kind of ignore. It was just something we had to at least kind of verify, really. And I think obviously in that particular time, it was just kind of a rush to kind of between all of us real estate publications trying to get to the story and see whether or not there was any truth to it. And just really to getting to the bottom of things. So that was juicy from, I guess, from the perspective or perhaps general public, and that it was, you know, gossip. And I think people, when people hear about developers potentially being in trouble, I think that always catches a lot of people's attentions. But I think at the end of the day, it wasn't really like that. But it was kind of exciting in terms of just being able to just the actual part of actually pursuing a story and having a deadline, really, and not just like having a firm deadline, but just having a rush and knowing that every other real estate reporter in the country is chasing the same story and trying to competing with that. I think it's kind of exciting for me. I kind of grew up with sports, so I'm like hyper competitive, to be honest with you. And so I think from that point, I kind of enjoy the kind of competition aspect of that. And that, so I don't necessarily enjoy that every single day. Sometimes it does it's just kind of being in that constant state of competitiveness sometimes is not necessarily good or healthy, really. But every now and then, it's having something like that. It does have a bit of a thrill, kind of regardless of what the story actually is, really. It's just something you know that everybody's going to read once you publish it, and then something that's people are going to be interested in knowing, and just kind of pursuing that story to the end, really. It's kind of what has to be like the process, more so than the actual substance and contents of the story, really.
Right, right. Maybe as a final question, Howard, what do you think the headline for 2025 will be?
I think it is a bit more about the uncertainty, really, just letting things kind of settle down. I mentioned, not to repeat what I said earlier, but I think it really is the biggest theme of the year, just, you know, seeing how things play out with the trade war and having the new government, new federal government come in and see what they do and with all their interchanges and that being settled down and seeing what they do or don't do, I think on all fronts, really, I think that's going to be, that's, I think that's really going to define the rest of the year, really. And whether that includes a smaller thing like development charges or other things, whether or not they change certain policies and what they do on housing, I think it just really, people are just continuing to have a wait and see approach. And then I think that's going to have a really impact on how people go about their decision making. And I think this year is really going to be about that. And I think perhaps if things go well and people like what they see, hopefully by 2026, we'll have a bit more stability and perhaps things can get a bit more back on track.
Do you see more pain in this market coming, or do you think the second half of the year will improve?
I mean, hopefully, I would say I think we perhaps hit rock bottom. I think last month was, if anybody keeps up with the financial market, last month was pretty wild. I don't imagine it's really, I mean, I guess that you never know with the American president, but I think it's, I'd imagine it can't really get much worse than that. And it seems like things are kind of on the upswing a little bit, and we're just towards a bit more common ground, at least, and a little bit more. There's a bit more positivity around it. So I think from that perspective, I think it will be, hopefully I'm not wrong about this and I don't regret saying this, but I think I do think the worst is kind of over. And I think hopefully how good things get, I think remains to be seen, but I think there are some factors there, like interest rates are still lower now than they were a year ago. So I think obviously that sure you guys know that has a big effect on the resale market and also developers. So I think some of the factors are already there. We just kind of need a little bit more stability and perhaps a few tweaks and changes here and there. And I think things could be on the way to getting better.
You heard it here first, folks. I hope you're right, Howard. We do have this segment called the Five Wire, Five Lighthearted Questions to end each episode. Do you have time to stick around for that?
Yeah, for sure.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been recognized as Multifamily Home Builder of the Year for 10 years in a row and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with two fitness areas, three children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca.
Okay, so question number one, Howard. What is a book that you would recommend that everybody read?
Oh, this is an easy one. My favorite author is George Orwell. And my favorite book is 1984, which perhaps a lot of people already read. Sometimes it's like mandated school reading, but for those who don't, I would definitely recommend reading it. Just every now and then, regardless of the news cycle, it's just always relevant. It's just like the reader, like you, people who read it like 20 years ago, it was relevant in certain contexts, and that it remains relevant now. It's just, you know, obviously with parallels to various governments, it's just always relevant. And I think it just remains really insightful in terms of just the commentary on politics and government. It's just something I would really recommend people read if you're into particularly like dystopian fiction. It's not too real for people.
Yeah, no kidding.
Reality.
I believe that's the second time that's been recommended on the show. And if I remember correctly, it was Wendy Waters who recommended it last time.
Oh, yeah.
And if you remember, Adam, I think I said, oh my God, I love that book. And then I started referencing all the characters from Animal Farm, which stays with me to this day as one of the more embarrassing moments on the podcast. But yeah, that's a fantastic one.
Oh, it wasn't your autobiography.
I'll have to talk to Wendy about that.
Yeah, I was like, oh, Snowball. What is one restaurant in Metro Vancouver or maybe even, well, no, we'll leave it to Metro Vancouver, but if you're in and around Metro Town, I'd be interested to hear as well. But one restaurant in Metro Vancouver that you think more people should know about?
Yeah, nothing in Burnaby really sticks out to me, to be honest, Brad, just because I've been there for so long that I've kind of gotten used to it. I don't think we have any too many restaurants that are specifically exclusive to Burnaby. So I guess, but in Metro Vancouver, I guess I'd probably go with Frankie's Jazz Club. It's this kind of Italian restaurant located near BC Place. It's kind of a jazz club, but it's also a restaurant, kind of this small, intimate space with live music on. I think it's most nights, but it might just be weekends. But yeah, it's just a really nice place with good food and live music.
That's a great one. I had no idea about that place.
Frankie's Jazz Club. Me neither. Huh. Yeah, good one.
Great one. Question number three, Howard, what are you binge watching or a movie recommendation?
Ooh, well, I'm a big movie person, so be pretty much on the spot. It's always hard to pick just one. I guess the TV show I'll start off with is The Pit, which is this kind of a series about this ER, just basically just following this ER shift for 15 hours. Just every single episode was 1 hour in the shift, and it was like a 15-hour shift. Place. I was just really, I kind of binge watched that. It was a weekly release, but I kind of waited for it all the episodes coming and kind of binge watched it. It was just really fascinating just seeing how ER, you know, shifts for ER staff and ER departments really work and it's kind of the things they have to deal with. And it was also a lot of commentary on, it's an American show, so it's a commentary about the American health system and just things they have to deal with. And, yeah, I thought that was a great show that I recommend to people who are interested in that. Although there's a little bit more, it's an HBO show, so you can imagine they didn't necessarily hold back on certain like in terms of like just gore and stuff like that. But it's not too bad. But it's definitely an interesting show. And I think a lot of people in the medical community have really complimented the show on its kind of accurate depiction of what it's like to work in a ER department. So that's something I appreciate as well.
Huh, that's a good one too. Do you have somebody you're music-wise you're listening to right now or a favorite musician?
That I would say has always been kind of Explosion in the Sky. And I think they're perhaps more most well known for being the kind of band that kind of soundtrack. Like, I think it was the movie, but also may have been also TV show Explosion in the Sky. They're like a what considered a post rock band, which is like just purely instrumental rock.
Oh yeah.
Okay, no lyrics, and they've always kind of been my favorite band. I've saw them once live here in Vancouver at the Cumber Ballroom, and they're great live as well. It's just great. Kind of, I would describe it as kind of cinematic and dramatic, and perhaps even a little bit like kind of emotional kind of rock music. It's just like purely just rock and just good music to kind of get you thinking about things, and good. I listen to a lot sometimes when I'm working, and it just creates a. They've been kind of retained to soundtrack a lot of movies and TV shows too as well. So I think they've always been one of my favorites.
Good writing music, I bet.
Yeah, sometimes. Although sometimes I do like perhaps like a nice and quiet, no music, or I do also like listening to like movie scores and that.
Right. That can shape the article too. So just as a final question, what behavior, habit, or belief have you adopted recently that's had a positive impact on your life?
I go with a habit. I guess I'll say just kind of cooking more, making more meals myself. I think caring about eating healthy just because of my family are particularly into eating healthy. So I've always been conscious of eating healthy, but I think I've been trying to form a bit more habits in terms of cooking more regularly and making my own meals and trying out different things. And I've kind of seen a growing interest in that for me, just kind of trying to make different things, and just obviously it's kind of grocery prices are going up, so that it's kind of beneficial in that sense too. It's a bit cheaper to make your own food and more your meals more regularly, and so that's also been something that's like I said, I would call it a new habit. I think it's just getting more into personal finance. I think that's something that I think a new habit that I've become more focused on the past year or so. I mean, wouldn't necessarily say that I didn't care about it before, but I just being a bit more proactive about it in the past year or so. I think it's new, and I think I would recommend a lot of people start thinking about more. I think there's a lot of things people can say, particularly in, you know, perhaps tougher growth, tougher economic times. I think it's something that becomes a bit more important, but could potentially have more benefits for people. So that's something, a new habit that I have taken up and would recommend to other people.
Fantastic. That's a great one. Well, how can people find out more about what you're doing, Howard? I know I subscribe to the Stories email newsletter or whatever, but how can people find out more about what you're doing and follow along?
We have various newsletters. We have a Western Canada specific newsletter, just focused on British Columbia and also a bit of Alberta, which I also cover from time to time. We also have a daily newsletter people can sign up for with kind of our stories of the day. We also have a week national newsletter that comes out on Fridays. People can follow us and subscribe to all of our content from those places. And if you want to follow me specifically, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I'm still on Twitter. Surprising, even though people have tried to get me to go to Blue Sky, I haven't really joined Blue Sky yet. But I'm available on those Twitter and LinkedIn primarily. And I generally share a lot of my articles there. And otherwise than that, it's just our website.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Howard. And that was really insightful and enlightening. So we appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate the invitation, guys. I'm really used to being on the other side of things and interviewing people. So this is a bit of an interesting experience for me being on the other side of things, but I appreciated the questions and thought they were good questions in my opinion, and I appreciate the time.
Right on.
Hey, thanks again.
Thanks so much, Howard.
Thank you.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Howard Chai from Stories.com, the journalist and Western lead and all-around interesting guy.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I love the conversation we had with Howard. And it's a very, I think what's exciting about it and unique for this show is he is someone who has a pretty unique perspective. I mean, we're often talking to developers, people in leadership positions at marketing firms or development firms. We're talking to real estate investors. We're talking to politicians.
Economists, yeah.
People that are typically in the market and active in the market on in a consistent basis. And Howard is definitely becoming a known voice in the market. But his perspective as being a renter in Burnaby, I think, is quite unique. And it adds some nuance to the conversation that we're having here on the show. Yeah, so I think it's a great, great conversation.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Interesting to hear how his perspectives changed since he got into the business, so to speak, the business of journalism and the business of real estate journalism. Interesting take on kind of chasing down those stories. And I feel like the stories a couple of years before Howard got into the business would have been a lot different. But these are kind of interesting times for a real estate journalist, as he discussed. So yeah, it was great having Howard on the show. And it was a great conversation.
Yeah, well, if you ever look at the comments section of articles around real estate, you realize that some of the loudest voices and most passionate voices are the least educated on the topic. Say. And so I'm not surprised that on Howard's take that over time he's, you know, it's almost like it takes living and breathing, I think, the industry and understanding real estate to realize how complicated it is and quickly. You know, it's easy to, or it becomes more challenging to express yourself in a passionate way one way or the other. It becomes very complicated.
Exactly that. What else do we have before we cut for the day, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. I almost use that tagline for stories. It's actually VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer where you get a VIP access to pre-sales, different incentives, stats, different types of stats, deal of the month. There's basically no reason why you shouldn't be on the LiveWire. That's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And of course, we also have tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information. It's for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us and sign up for what I think is the most advanced way to kind of monitor the market and get really good intel. This is something that I think, you know, we have so many people on this tool benefiting from this tool that give us the feedback that it just makes life so much easier to kind of keep an eye on real estate. So if you want to sign up for your free account, it's private client services, PCS, over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Yeah, click buy with us, Adam.
Yeah, just click buy with us. Very, very easy. I just want to shout out also, while we're here, everybody that reached out. I think we had a very positive feedback on our episode with the gentleman from Greater Vancouver Realtors, Jeff King. And of course,
oh, and the BCREA,
yes,
Trevor Coote.
Trevor Coote. Tons of great feedback from that episode. Lots of people had had reached out to just say that they really enjoyed the take. So great having those guys back on the show, and always a great conversation. So if you haven't heard that, pop back and have a listen. It's a great one.
Absolutely. And if you want to talk about that or anything else, give me a shout at any time, 778-847-2854. Or you can try me at matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, and we're back here next week with another great episode.
Absolutely. We'll see you then. Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.